Chapter 7. He was asleep in the robe, and he had been asleep, he thought, for a long time. The robe was spread on the forest floor in the lee of the rocks beyond the cave mouth, and as he slept, he turned, and turning, rolled on his pistol, which was fastened by a lanyard to one wrist and had been by his side under the cover when he went to sleep, shoulder and back weary, leg tired, his muscles pulled with tiredness so that the ground was soft, and simply stretching in the robe against the flannel lining was voluptuous with fatigue. Waking, he wondered where he was, knew, and then shifted the pistol from under his side and settled happily to stretch back into sleep, his hand on the pillow of his clothing that was bundled neatly around his rope-soled shoes. He had one arm around the pillow. Then he felt her hand on his shoulder and turned quickly, his right hand holding the pistol under the robe. "Oh, it is thee," he said, and dropping the pistol he reached both arms up and pulled her down. With his arms around her he could feel her shivering. "Get in," he said softly. "It is cold out there."
"No, I must not."
"Get in," he said, "and we can talk about it later." She was trembling, and he held her wrist now with one hand and held her lightly with the other arm. She had turned her head away. "Get in, little rabbit," he said, and kissed her on the back of the neck.
"I am afraid."
"No, do not be afraid. Get in."
"How?"
"Just slip in. There is much room. Do you want me to help you?"
"No,"
she said. And then she was in the robe, and he was holding her tight to him, and trying to kiss her lips, and she was pressing her face against the pillow of clothing, but holding her arms close around his neck. Then he felt her arms relax, and she was shivering again as he held her. "No," he said, and laughed. "Do not be afraid. That is the pistol." He lifted it and slipped it behind him.
"I am ashamed,"
she said, her face away from him.
"No, you must not be. Here. Now." "No, I must not. I am ashamed and frightened."
"No, my rabbit. Please."
"I must not. If thou dost not love me."
"I love thee."
"I love thee. Oh, I love thee. Put thy hand on my head,"
she said away from him, her face still in the pillow. He put his hand on her head and stroked it, and then suddenly her face was away from the pillow, and she was in his arms, pressed close against him, and her face was against his, and she was crying. He held her still and close, feeling the long length of the young body, and he stroked her head and kissed the wet saltiness of her eyes, and as she cried he could feel the rounded, firm-pointed breasts touching through the shirt she wore.
"I cannot kiss," she said. "I do not know how."
"There is no need to kiss."
"Yes, I must kiss. I must do everything."
"There is no need to do anything. We are all right. But thou hast many clothes."
"What should I do?"
"I will help you."
"Is that better?"
"Yes, much." "It is not better to thee?"
"Yes, much better." "And I can go with thee, as Pilar said?"
"Yes."
"But not to a home, with thee?"
"No, to a home."
"No, no, no, with thee, and I will be thy woman."
Now as they lay, all that before had been shielded was unshielded. Where there had been roughness of fabric, all was smooth, with a smoothness and firm rounded pressing, and a long warm coolness, cool outside and warm within, long and light and closely holding, closely held, lonely, hollow-making with contours, happy-making, young and loving, and now all warmly smooth, with a hollowing, chest-aching, tight-held loneliness that was such that Robert Jordan felt he could not stand it, and he said, "Hast thou loved others?"
"Never."
Then suddenly going dead in his arms,
"But things were done to me."
"By whom?"
"By various."